Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
A missing person is a person who has vanished and is unconfirmed as alive or dead, as their location and fate are unknown.
Welcome back to Down Rabbit Holes Podcast. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Amy.
And welcome to 2022.
Unbelievable.
Amy, this could not be a better case for you to kick off the year with.
You think so?
So when you texted me the name, I was like, yes! Because I listen to a podcast that's not a true crime podcast. But she's, like, she's a comedian, but she's interested in true crime. And she brings this person up all the time. But I can tell you when she's talked about other cases that she doesn't have her facts correct. So I've never trusted, like, her ability to tell the story. So when you sent it, I was like, this is so exciting because you're going to give me the real breakdown.
Well, I will try my best, but let me first tell you that this is going to be a controversial one. And aside from the content being controversial, it's going to be controversial because it's to be argued if this person is even missing. According to the police and the powers that be, she is not missing. According to probably popular consensus by the public, she is. When I first start talking about it, you might be like, Amy, you're bogus for even covering this. It doesn't fit what you guys are doing. But I think it could. I definitely do. And I'm not going to lie, this content is... Again, ding, ding, the word of the day is controversial. Now, I'm going to be absolutely transparent with you in that I am biased. I sway in a particular way when we talk about this person and the bigger picture here. And I know that, and that's why I'm telling you I'm being transparent, because I will do my best to present other angles, if possible. But if you hear that there is bias, there is some. And I hope that I can be as kind as possible about it and be respectful, because for some people, there is some good to be had in this. And I'll touch on that a little bit, okay?
Okay. I'm assuming the overarching controversy has to do with the cult.
Well, here's where I'm going to stop you right there, is by all means, this is a church. This is a place that people have found some spiritual awakening, or they feel accepted and heard. So I'm not going to call it a cult. I will leave that open to interpretation. Although, like I said, there is some bias and...
All right, you got to tell them now.
If I sway the other way, you'll get it. The person that I'm going to talk to you about is Shelley Miscavige. Are you ready?
I am.
All right. So as much as I just want to dive into Shelley, and I started to when I wrote it up, but the things that I spoke about didn't make any sense unless you understand some content have a bare understanding of Scientology. And if you didn't know already, Shelley is one of the higher ranking officials, if you will, of the Scientology, which is a well-known church. Now, it appears as though people probably relate it to having a popularity in the United States, but this is worldwide that it's recognized, and there are a lot of members of this church. The first thing that we have to understand is Scientology isn't that new. However, in terms of world religion, it's probably one of the newer ones that there are. Scientology was developed by a man named L. Ron Hubbard in around the 1950s. It started as a basis from his book, Dianetics. And in short, and I will tell you that there is so much involved, I'm just going to let you know that it started off as kind of an approach to mental health that involved auditing. And the idea was to free people from their past and to reach a stage of spiritual clearing. And that's really where Scientology branched off into. And the goal is to work through levels, if you will, to reach this stage of clear. That is the main goal of it. And there are lots of other details involved, but I'm not going to get into that. It's too much. And I think, honestly, most people don't even understand. And I think that's for a reason. I think that part of it isn't meant to be understood unless you have the bare understanding. So you have to go into these teachings, into these courses, to have an understanding, to move through the levels. Even if you're in the church studying, I don't think you really understand exactly what the content of what you're trying to achieve is, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does.
This book that Hubbard wrote really wasn't well received by the community. This is mainly because there was really no evidentiary basis for this working, for this to have any impact on mental health whatsoever. There was a following regardless of this, and lots of people hopped on board. This put Hubbard at odds with many people, and it put him at risk, legally, financially, all of this. Because as the church developed, he was selling these ideas of being able to heal yourself with Scientology, mental health-wise, physically. And there was question as to what the church was doing with the funds. So the FDA is involved, the FBI, investigating him, trying to figure out if what he was doing was illegal. And at minimum, like, he shouldn't be selling these ideas for healing without any evidence other than his word and the word of the church. Arguably, Hubbard had little choice but to go on the run. So he essentially left his wife at the time and went into hiding. Hubbard had purchased 3 boats. I don't believe this was for the purpose of him hiding, but he had at some point purchased these 3 boats. And he lived between these boats, sailing, docking, evading the authorities on these boats. And he had started what he had called the Sea Org. The Sea Org operates only with the most dedicated and loyal Scientologists. Now, all that I've watched and all that I've done in reading about Scientology, because it very much interests me, and I have seen Leah Remini's whole docuseries on this and read or YouTubed whatever I could, I still don't really have an understanding of the day-to-day tasks and what the purpose was for some of these roles in the church. Maybe, I mean, they say some of the tasks that the cadets, if you will, or the members of the church were tasked with doing, but I still have a hard time making links to how this is supposed to help the church. Regardless, that's how it worked. People were dedicated. So David Miscavige, who was born in the early 1960s, wasn't born into Scientology, but he became a member as a boy when his father, Ron, was basically overhearing something about Scientology, became very interested and followed up on his interest in the church. And he quickly hopped on board and he started his auditing sessions and became very interesting and hoped that it would help his young son, David, who struggled with allergies and asthma. And he eventually brought David to one of his auditing sessions and David walked out miraculously happy and arguably, but notably cured from his disease. And that was it for him. David was in. He breathed, drank up the church. And by the age of about 15, he begged his family to join the Sea Org, which involved parents essentially handing over their children to the organization to go live on the boat with L. Ron Hubbard and serve him.
Seems legit.
Side note is that Scientology throughout the years has several different locations. And families regularly send their children to go live in the Sea Org to serve and don't ever really return home and are very much, and this is according to not the church, but people who have left the church, that they've been separated from their families and never reunited and cut off contact. And it's not like they're going home for visits or sending weekly letters. That's it. They're done. They've given their life to the Sea Org and they signed their billion-year contract and they're in it for life.
Not culty at all.
Well, and this is the part where I want to say that I actually do know a couple of people who are devout Scientologists and have been since I can remember, at least in the 90s. And they, by all accounts, have felt that Scientology has helped them in their personal life. They feel as if they've reached or are striving to reach their full potential and are very happy with the gifts of Scientology. For me, I can't help but to recognize those people too. I don't know what that means, but in fairness, I can't leave those people out of the discussion. Shelley, who was born on January 18th of 1961, was also a child of Scientology. She had one sister and her parents, her father worked pretty much as a contractor or some type of handyman, and her mother, not exactly sure what she did, but I think there's some evidence that she did have some mental illness. She was a devout follower herself of Scientology and begged her parents to send her to the Sea Org, in which they did. She joined the Sea Org around the age of 15 or 16. And when she was there, that is where she met David Miscavige. She fell in love and they began to date in around 1978, and they were married by 1982. At this time, Shelley and David were both kind of a few of the people that were the right-hand men, for lack of better words, and women, of Scientology and L. Ron Hubbard. He was their most trusted. They probably knew more than anybody else in the church. And when they married, David was rising pretty much to take over the church, although he was not the only one, and Shelley was right along with him. And when they married, they were looked at as very much a team and maybe what we might call today as a power couple. As the years passed, Hubbard's mental health and physical health deteriorated. Now, remember, he's been in hiding since probably around the 1970s, when the FBI and the FDA first started to look into him. By the time his life ended, he had never come out of hiding. Like, he wasn't just away for a couple of months. He went away and hopped around from country to country in the United States through the different compounds or facilities of Scientology. He was never, ever recovered, as we know, and never questioned or investigated any further, but that's kind of what we're looking at here. So, at the end of his life, in one of his hiding spots, you know, he's struggling with his physical health, pancreatitis, strokes. He's delusional, kind of paranoid. By the time he died, David assumed the head of the church position. Now, in Leah Remini's docuseries, it's argued that David kind of unfairly took advantage of this position and taking it. There were also others that were looked at or thought to be the people that would take over when Hubbard died. But however he did it, and arguably if he manipulated his way in, he did it successfully. And he remains, till today, 2021, the head and leader of the Scientology and the church. The first years of their marriage, and initially when Hubbard passed, the couple is still looked at as this power couple and making decisions together. She's a little bit more passive, so David is really the speaker for them both. But by all accounts and witnesses, she was very supportive, right along, right next to him. And she never disagreed or put up a fight. And there was just nothing, it seemed, that David could do or say that she would disagree with. Reports then say that behind the scenes, she really became more of an employee than a partner. And the marriage didn't have the luster, if it ever did, that it did. They weren't very affectionate with one another. Shelley is reported to have been very panicky about David losing interest in her. She would often mirror him and the way that he was with the employees. He was very much a perfectionist. He very much seemed to order people around, and when he wasn't pleased, he would demand that people repeat and repeat and repeat until he was pleased, if he was ever pleased at all. And Shelley did the same thing, although people close to her say that she was very kind, but she was very meek and didn't have a lot of friends and just completely devoted to David. There were some reports that if employees didn't dress the part, if they looked as if they might have been maybe too provocative or didn't do things right, Shelley would immediately kick them out of that role. She did not want anyone to maybe, as reports allude to, sway David away from her, and this is where she's becoming panicked. Again, as time goes on, David's even harsh with Shelley. He demands things of her, and when she can't get them right or doesn't do them to his liking, he will have her repeat them over and over until she, if at all, gets them right. David would often go away, and when David was away, Shelley was left in charge. When I say she was left in charge, though, she wasn't actually left in charge. She was basically forced to follow through with whatever David ordered her and the organization to do, which would be fine if she actually did that. But it appeared as though Shelley would take more liberties and do what she wanted. And on one specific trip away, Shelley had basically rearranged some employment, took people out of roles that they were in and switched their roles to another. And when David returned, he was not pleased. And most reports say that this was it. This was the change of their whole relationship, and arguably the end, if you will, or the last sightings that we have of Shelley. The last reported sighting was Shelley attended her father's services when he passed, and that was heavily secured with members of Scientology who were basically looking over her shoulder to make sure, questionably or arguably, that she was doing what she was supposed to be doing. It wasn't until the wedding of Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes that Shelley's absence was finally recognized. No one had asked any questions up until that point. Now, a little backstory to this is that Shelley is named as one of the responsible parties in hooking Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes together and arranging their relationship. Leah Remini reports that by the time Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes were married, Leah Remini does say that she probably wasn't in the best place with the church. She wasn't on the outs or anything, but she was outspoken and she asked questions here and there. And I think at this point, she's kind of becoming a little bit more questioning of the church. So she had already had members write her up, which, if you want to go look into that particular part of Scientology, you can kind of go do that. To me, it's a little bit like, I don't know, hunting a witch, like Salem witch trials kind of stuff. But nevertheless, that's what they did. And she had asked where Shelley was because Shelley was actually absent. Now, David Miscavige and Tom Cruise are really good friends. So it was thought that they would be there for sure. And when Shelley wasn't and Leah asked, people basically shook their head and then they were like, don't ask about Shelley. She was shunned, guilted, and shamed for that. And I think that further propelled her to wonder what was going on in Scientology. She began asking a little bit more questions, also distancing herself from the church, and eventually she left the church, which was no easy task. You can check out her docuseries for more information about that as well. And eventually, with finding no answers and no one giving her any clarity on what happened to Shelley, she actually really and truly filed a police report or a missing persons report for the authorities to investigate where Shelley was. Well, they eventually did get back to her and say, yep, we looked into it and we actually met face to face with Shelley and she is fine and well. That's where it should end, right?
And what year was this?
I believe this was circa 2013. So okay. Remember, she hadn't been seen since Tom and Katie's wedding. This was 2007, 2008. So it had been years since anyone said they publicly had seen Shelley anywhere. So she files the police report. The police say, we met with her. She's fine. Leave it at that. However, she's like, this is still weird. No one has seen this woman. She and I used to talk. She used to send me a Christmas card every year. I get nothing. What's going on? Well, honestly, that's where we are today, where not just Leah, but everybody is asking for some
proof of life
response, some statement that Shelley, hello, are you okay? Can you please show yourself? But no one's heard anything from her since then. So it's been, what, 13 years-ish? And we have no word that she's okay other than by the LAPD, who went to see her in about 2013 and report she's fine.
But that was 8 years ago.
It sure was, yes. Although, that seems to satisfy most people, but there is a really large following that is very suspicious of the whereabouts of Shelley.
Okay, so what are the theories?
Well, the most prevalent theory is that Shelley's locked away somewhere in one of Scientology's compounds, or I don't even know what to call them other than a compound, I'm sorry, but that she's locked away, that she made the organization, that she made David very angry, and she's a threat to the organization, so she must be kept hidden. What does that mean but for their marriage? Are they still married? I don't know. But that's one major theory. Is she dead? Did she escape? We don't know. Or is she just alive and fine and doesn't want anything to do with anybody?
Okay, so if she's alive and I'm not going to say fine. Because if she's alive, I think she essentially is being held captive.
See, I find that a hard one to argue. I mean, She was a devout follower. She was dedicated to her husband and all the work that he was doing, by all accounts. Scientology notoriously is against anyone that has anything bad to say about them. This is in their own writings. This is not me being biased. This is in their own writings. This is in their responses to the media and anyone that says anything about them. So she very well just could want to have no contact with anybody.
Yeah, but you think about the trip when he had come back and she had changed things.
Sure.
And then he was mad. That, to me, is more of a power dynamic and abusive almost than a marriage.
That can be definitely argued, yes.
So my guess would be if she's being held captive, it's like under the guise of it's for the church, but it's really not. It's for control.
And is it mental captivity or is it physical captivity or both? Because reports from people that have left the church and been involved in the Sea Org, and also if you view their location in California, it is heavily barricaded with like wire fencing and stuff on the outside. It's stated from people that left that it's impossible to leave. And even if you do, what do? You've been cut off from your family for all of these years. Has she chosen to stay or can she not get out?
I think they're one and the same. And what I mean by that is,
I think the lines get blurry, but I think that you could mentally say, I don't want to be here, I hate it here, and physically have no way to get out.
That's what I mean. Like, if she's choosing to leave, okay, she has no resources, her parents are deceased, what is she going to do, just run? And then what? I'm not saying she should stay. Don't get that twisted. I'm saying in her head, that's got to be the thought process.
Right. It could be, or maybe she thinks she deserves this, or maybe she thinks that this is what she is supposed to do in her role.
Okay, do you think she's alive?
That's a good question. I think yes. Many people have been in the Sea Org and have remained in the Sea Org for decades.
Okay, and she's only 60 now.
Mm-hmm. But you understand the motive, right?
What do you mean?
What, like, if she was held captive, it's not just because, most likely, she did a couple of things to make her husband mad.
Oh, no, I'm sure it's because she knows about the church.
Right, she knows too many things that have happened, been seen by others, or what has been done. And these reports are from people that have left the church that feel and report, no, not even feel, they report, and I believe them, that they're true, that they've been abused mentally and physically.
Let me ask you this. Do you think there's a chance that she's escaped, but she can't come out of hiding because the church is after her?
Maybe, but I feel like the church is very powerful, and they could possibly find her.
And that's what I mean. Like, do you think she's has to stay in hiding because of what would happening?
Yeah, maybe. But on the other hand, we have people like Mike Rinder, who used to be a high-ranking official in the church, right beside David Miscavige and Leah Remini. These people are out there telling their stories, and I think if it was easy enough to just give Mike Rinder a call, I don't know. That's also from someone in a healthy headspace who has not been coerced and perhaps abused and in a mentally fragile position. So for you, there's no chance that this woman is simply like, I don't want to talk to anyone, I'm not making any statements, Or maybe even they divorced after that incident and she remained in the church, but she has no business or need to show up at any social gatherings anymore or anything like that.
I think it's possible. But if it's the case, I think it's not. I think it's coerced.
You just can't conceptualize that she's like, no, we're happily divorced, but that's our business. I don't want anyone in it, and I don't want to have any questions asked of me. And I just don't want to be in the public spotlight.
Okay, but why has not one person seen her in, what, 2008? Oh, no, 13, the police claim they saw her.
Mm-hmm.
8 years. I just have a hard time believing someone would voluntarily be in isolation for 8 years.
But members of the Sea Org don't leave where they are. If they have no family, someone can attest that one of them hasn't been seen in 8 years. I'm just being devil's advocate.
No, I know. I'm just thinking about how I feel about it. I think that I'm allowing my bias for Scientology, which I don't even know a whole lot about. Like, I didn't watch any of the documentaries or any of that. But I think I'm letting my bias make it feel like it's coercive.
It's hard to hear, give or take more than a dozen survivors who have left the church say what has happened to them and not say what's going on. I will say that. Absolutely.
So where do you think you end up?
I don't think she's dead. I think she's probably living either Clearwater, which is the home base of Scientology in Florida.
Can I tell you that I have pictures? I've been there. Not inside.
Oh, you've passed. But. Yeah. Yeah. Or she's in California, where another location for the Sea Org is. And she has probably been knocked down a couple of ranks or whatever the language is. And perhaps her and David are no longer married. And she just has no business speaking to anyone. And probably under church pressure doesn't allow her to make a statement.
So do you think it's coercive or do you think it's voluntary?
As biased as I try not to be, I still think it's coercive.
So is that where we're going to land? She's being held essentially against her will?
Yes, I think so. You don't send a letter to an old friend. Nothing. Not a phone call. Yes, you met with the authorities once. That tells me you're alive, but that does not tell me you're well mentally.
It tells me you were alive 8 years ago.
I mean, that's true. That's true. I still have hope that she's alive. But what condition is she in? I don't know. That's questionable.
I do too. But she's definitely being...
Well...
Yeah, I agree with that.
Let me just say this. I am very curious to what everyone thinks. I am curious if we do have any listeners that know anyone who is a Scientologist, have anything hopeful or positive that they want to say about their experiences, because I like to be educated either way. But also, really, it...
Yeah, for sure.
If you think you have another thought about Shelley, like, did she leave the country? Is she living on one of their sea vessels or something like that? What do you think?
Yes. Tell us your thoughts.
But I think I land on she's alive, but she is kind of under coerced distress. She's living on one of the bases or the compounds, if you will. Not doing the job that she once did before. Her and David probably aren't even together, if that's a thing. And, yeah, that's what I think.
All right. I'm just going to go around in circles again. So let's open it up. Tell us what you guys think. And we'll be back next week with a whole new case.
All right. Thanks. Bye. For more information about this case and other cases we've covered, visit our website at www.downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Follow us and interact with us on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, we are Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast. You can also reach out to us via email at theories@downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast is a 2002 production written, hosted, and developed by Amy Lamar and Melissa Benitez. Music by Kevin Wyman.
Audio production by Caitlin Reynolds.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, or prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
Love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.